Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
And here we go.
Hey, once again, that's the sound of rock cracking. You've got Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You're listening to us right here on webtalkradio.net. I'm the host, Ed Holliday. And wow, is it heating up where you are? We're in the middle of July. And wow, it's hot when you're talking about politics. And we'll conclude our conversation with Dave Henderson. What we're trying to do is see the corruption of the Clinton machine that was built during the 90s. And Hillary Clinton, with a worldwide organization called the Clinton Foundation, pulling in hundreds of millions of dollars, keeping their best buddies and people they want to use that they have used and keep well paid through the Clinton Foundation. Well, that's where did it come from? We're going back to one person that we interviewed back just before the election. He has a book called The Arkansas Project. His name is Dave Henderson, and his life was destroyed by the Clinton machine. He was exonerated, but they drug him through the mud for 2 years. So he understands what the Clinton machine can do. So we're going to go to him. And
if you'll permit me, Doc, to back way down, even from the 90s, okay, at some point here in our conversation, I'd like to have the opportunity to discuss some things with you that will relate to today.
Yeah, well, let's do that. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, for your listeners, Doc, I grew up in a little town in the very extreme western part of Kentucky, mostly a agricultural area, not too far from the famous Real Foot Lake. When I was only 18 years old, I enlisted in the Air Force. Like many young men from that area, throughout the mid-America, really, young people who didn't have any great opportunities facing them, and the military was a place that a lot of us went. And for very good outcomes, I'm very pleased that I had that opportunity. After enlisting and completing basic training, I wound up in Keesler Air Force Base in Biloxi, Mississippi, studying radar, and I became a radar operator and was immediately sent to the Middle East. And that was 1956. That was during the Cold War, peak of the Cold War, actually. I was sitting on the edge of the Mediterranean, on the south side of the Mediterranean in North Africa and Libya. We were on constant watch for Soviet bombers and other Soviet assets. Of course, we were knowledgeable that if ever there was an attack, the first thing they would hit would be the radar sites. So that wasn't a very comfortable feeling. But during that period of time, Khrushchev developed quite a relationship with Anwar Sadat. Not Sadat, I'm sorry, his predecessor.
Yeah, Nasser was Nasser.
Anyway, in Egypt, right next door to Libya, and they were encroaching into the Middle East quite heavily. And of course, as I detailed in my book, on an assignment to Turkey, when there was an uprising between Syria and Turkey, much the same as exists now, and the Soviets were backing them, I was a part of a emergency radar team that was sent in there for NATO, discovered the U-2 that was operating out of the base that I was on, and had to keep that secret for several years until General Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, announced that it had been shot down over Russia. I had tracked that aircraft out of Vinson Lake Air Base on a daily basis on radar, saw it go across the Black Sea and hover around in the southern Soviet Union.
So what was going on at that time,
Doc, taking the long view back, was that the Sputnik spacecraft was being developed by the Soviets, and I think the U-2 was kind of watching that project. I don't know where it was built, but that was a big, big event. The Soviets had gotten ahead of us in the space era, and that began what was known as the space age, or space race, between the U.S. and the Soviets. And we wound up, of course, getting ahead of them. We even cooperated, and this is the point I wanted to get to. Uh-huh. It's a long story getting to the point I wanted to get to. We began to cooperate with the Soviets in our space programs to the benefit of both nations. And we had Soyuz, I believe, space station that we shared jointly with the Soviet cosmonauts and our astronauts. We used joint space stations. We cooperated with them. And it stretches the imagination to think that we would have gone to the limits or gone to the extremes that are being accused of trying to get the Soviets to pick sides in this election. I mean, it just mind boggles me.
And like I think we've mentioned before, it seemed like it was always the Democrats would be very easy on Russia and say, you know, let's learn to live together. and now it's like they're the worst enemy we've ever had. Coming from the Democratic Party's point of view. How dare can we even talk to them? I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling how, like you said, we've worked hard, and especially Democrats more than anybody, worked hard to build relationships with the Russians. And they talk about elections. I never forget when Bill Clinton was president. You remember Yeltsin helped bring down communism in the USSR, broke up the Soviet Union, and Yeltsin was pretty much had a trouble with the bottle, and he was running for election, and the Clinton team went in and tried to boost him up, and they did boost him up so that the then mayor of Moscow, Putin, would be able to be in second in power, and then took over power. So in a way, the Clintons helped put Putin in power, if you want to really look at it.
Oh, yes. And another big illustration of the Democrats is during the last administration, the Obama administration, the hard work that Hillary and the old senator from Massachusetts, whose name escapes me, but I'm talking about the Iranian deal that was struck about their atomic energy program.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the Russians, of course, are Iran's biggest backer.
Right.
And they were the ones to really benefit in their foreign policy from what Hillary and her successor, and John Kerry, always a problem. He the one who threw away his Vietnam medals over the fence of the Capitol.
Right.
Anyway.
And then, you know, it is ironic, you know, he threw away his medals, and here they're talking about how the Russians are enemy, and he's the one that helped cause the Russians to benefit from the Iranian deal more than anybody else.
Yes, and then there's another one. All of the talk about how horrible it was that another nation is trying to influence the election of a separate nation, and the Obama administration openly attempted to influence the Israeli election. They tried to get Netanyahu defeated
and spent
a lot of money doing it.
And some of the money was taxpayer money through the State Department.
Yes, exactly. So you and I apparently read the same things, Doc.
And, you know, it's out there for any public consumption, and yet the news media... Seems the mainstream news media is just having a hard time. They got blinders on. The only thing they want to look at is the Trump and Russia connection.
Yeah.
When we know for sure the Ukraine, we already know the Ukrainians were trying to help Hillary. And if you're going to talk about influence elections, and we don't even know how many times did somebody in the Democratic Party, how many times did they run into the Russian ambassador or meet a Russian? Yeah. We hadn't heard that. Of course they did. I mean, you do that when you're in Washington, D.C.
And Doc, today's news, which you and I have discussed earlier this afternoon, of John McCain.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've mentioned that to your listeners.
We haven't talked about it in the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, go ahead and tell them what we know about John McCain.
Well, just today there was a story out about he had sought out dirt on Trump from the Soviet Union on Hillary's behalf. Or so it appears in what I read today. Anyone who has Google, and I'm sure that covers everybody who listens to you, could Google John McCain and the Soviet Union, and that story is going to pop up there. I believe it was in a British newspaper, wasn't it?
I think so. Something getting that press, but it was. And like you mentioned, I mean, the international trips, John McCain and Lindsey Graham seemed to, travel some Clinton team members.
Oh, they were buddy-buddy, the three of them. They traveled all over the world together when she was Secretary of State. And it's common knowledge. Again, Google is a wonderful thing. And I would say Google the relationship between John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and Hillary Clinton, and it will blow your mind. And, that little trio caused a lot of things to happen that shouldn't have, in my view.
Well, we've talked about our listeners know so much that I supported Trump because I didn't think we had a really good option there. But Hillary Clinton, and I still to this day, as many people are never Trumpers and the mainstream media is after Trump, It almost makes my heart sink to think about what would have happened if Hillary Clinton had won the presidency, if she had picked the next Supreme Court justice. I mean, we would be in a heap of trouble for anybody that believes in the bedrock principles of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
Yes. Well, I must tell you that in the very beginning of the campaign when we had 17 candidates, Donald Trump was certainly not my first choice. And
my listeners know that
as time went on, my mind was changing. And since the election, I am just ecstatic that he got elected because he has done so much with all this pressure around him. He's just quietly gone about fulfilling his promises. And he just had a very nice meeting in France this morning that seemed to have developed into some kind of a friendship. And of course his wife, speaking five languages, I think, of Eastern Europe, she is such an asset to him.
As you said that, and I've mentioned to my listeners in the last week or two about Melania Trump. You know, when President Obama was elected, and to her credit, you know, Michelle Obama being the first lady, she got all kind of great press.
Oh my gosh, yes.
All over the place. And you know, Melania Trump has been such an asset for Donald Trump on these, especially knowing five languages, these international tours, the fact that she was a legal immigrant herself. All these things are so positive for America.
She's extremely dignified.
And where's the press? You know, even though they may hate Donald Trump, they should be, you know, they're not. I don't see any good stories. Like, you know, Michelle Obama, and to her credit, she deserved them. I like Michelle as a first lady when she stayed away from politics. But where are the good stories about our first lady now?
Well, they're not there. And, you know, John F. Kennedy's wife was idolized by the media. I mean, that was total idolatry.
Yeah.
And, of course, she was a sophisticate who spoke French and grew up in the wealthy climate of Massachusetts and married JFK. And then you switch from that when he was murdered, assassinated. That would have been in about 1961, 62.
Yeah, 63, I believe it was. When
so
he
was it 63?
Assassinated, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Along comes Lyndon Johnson, who was about as crude as a person could be, and he became the president. And Lady Bird, his wife, was about as crooked as Hillary.
Huh.
And, you know, a little thing that is seldom mentioned, if ever, it stuck in my mind for years and years, because, again, I was being almost 80. I was alive in Washington during much of that period of time. The first $100 billion federal budget was during Lyndon Johnson's presidency. Now, think about that. The U.S. government will spend 3 or 4 times that every day.
Right.
But the very first national federal budget that reached $100 billion occurred in Lyndon Johnson's day.
Under Lyndon Johnson, well.
Isn't that a remarkable thing?
It is, and of course he helped kick in a lot of programs that helped that grow and grow and grow, didn't he?
He kept the printing presses going with all of his, what did he call it, the Great Society.
Yep, Great Society, and let's sum this up, trying to swing back around. Now, one thing I found interesting you mentioned in the conversation we've had is, you know, you're talking about when Syria and Turkey were sort of going at it some, that back in the 50s some, and then you said like...
57,
and the Soviets came in and sort of backed Syria at that point again, and then NATO sort of was backing Turkey, or, well, they didn't really get behind them.
We put the assets in there that could defend Turkey from encroachment by Syria and the Soviets. There would have been a war between those two nations had we not involved ourselves. But I was a part of a unit at Wheelis Air Base in Tripoli, Libya, that was on 24-hour-a-day alert to go to any NATO country that was under attack or threatened under attack, to go there to operate and control assets, airborne assets, through our radar facilities. And I was on a small team that had to have our bags packed in our barracks rooms 24 hours a day because we never knew when we'd be called out. And that happened in the fall of 1957. And again, historians and people that like to dabble with Google can go back and look at the Turkish-Syrian conflict in the fall of 1957, and you can read all about it.
Well, and here we are. Here we are with Soviets, you know, right smack in the middle of Syria.
Trying
to control the destiny right here in 2017.
But that's for sure.
And then other summing up, the Clinton machine is big. It's not as big as it used to be after Hillary lost the election. It seems to me it'd be winding down. But do you think it's still a formidable big machine? You know, are they going to keep people on? Of course, they had a big payroll because they were keeping people really in waiting to get into the Clinton administration if Hillary had won in 2016. So, you know, you wonder, are they, you know, they disbanded to some degree, but do they keep everybody on board, or will somebody be unhappy and actually come out and spill the beans for once on the Clintons?
Well, Doc, that's a great question. A long question, but a great one, because it's complicated. My belief about that is that so many of these billionaires who were made in the last couple of decades through their relationship with the Clintons and their machine, they're loyal to them, you know, and they'll give them however many hundreds of millions they need for whatever project. They have no trouble raising enormous sums of money. money, of course, is what makes the political world go round, and they're masters at it. I do not think they have anywhere near the power that they had one day, and I think her loss of this election interrupted it permanently. But and you know, they're getting some age on them too.
Right.
There's talk about Chelsea doing it. Yeah. It's so silly to even think about something like that. But
they keep the machine going. But you did say something I hadn't thought about, because you know, when Clinton was president, Bill Clinton was president in the 90s. That's when he had a .com explosion, and there were billionaires made. Just
that's right.
Of billionaires made.
That's right. Absolutely. And a lot of them off our shores, a lot of billionaires in the Middle East and other places around the world kicked in big money to the Clinton Foundation. It's a big what did our old gangster life mafia
yeah.
it's like a legal mafia. Well, I wouldn't exactly call it legal, but it was a government-protected mafia.
Well, that's Dave, I can tell you it's been a pleasure speaking to you again, and I thank you for coming on and helping us better understand the history of the Clinton machine and some of the going-ons, and now even today, seeing you know what's going on with the Democratic Party and this Russian collusion story. I do hope that we can really get the real truth one of these days, and maybe somebody that knows the inside story on the Clintons would actually come out and spill the beans.
Well, I'm sure there'll be many more books written about them. And in the meantime, I appreciate your mentioning my book, and I hope your listeners will take the time to read it. They may find that some of what we've talked about today was mentioned there, and see it a little more clearly.
Yeah, your book really goes into some insight and history that touches on lives. And like I said, so many people mentioned in your book, even though a lot of it happened around Whitewater in the 90s, and you do bring out other things in your book, but there's people that are in the reins of power today that are went through that time, and you were there with them and talked about it. And so your book is one that's it's a needed book for history and a noted book. And so I hope that our listeners will go there and pick up that book, because you'll be glad you did.
Yeah, thank you, Doc.
Thanks for joining us today. And remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Bedrock Truths, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen, or visit docholliday.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.